You remember when we studied the letter to the Romans from Paul, how he talked about there in chapter 15, his plan, he's writing to the Romans, his plan was to take the gift that the Gentile churches had given to the needy saints in Jerusalem, and then he was going to come visit the saints in Rome on his way to Spain. He wanted to head to Spain eventually. Of course, when he got to Jerusalem and he delivered the money that had been collected to those needy saints, his plan got sidetracked. And he wasn't able to just leave and then go to Rome. He ends up being in prison for 4 years. Two of those is at Caesarea. Two of them were at Rome. So he does go to Rome, but certainly not under the conditions he was expecting. And then, of course, he is released from that. And for a period of time, he is able to go about doing teaching. So the first question is, did Paul ever get to go to Rome?
Yeah, he made it.
Changed.
It seems that he did. The Bible doesn't tell us a whole lot about it. I'm going to give you one quote here. A guy named Clement of Rome, he was a Christian, an early Christian. He said this. He said, "Having taught righteousness to the whole world and come to the extreme limit of the West and suffered martyrdom under the prefects." In the extreme limit of the West, most people would think that would be Spain. You know, when Jonah fled from God, where did he go? You remember where he was headed?
Yeah.
That's where he was supposed to go. Where did he go? Tarshish. You remember where Tarshish is? Spain. It's in the region of Spain. That was the extreme limit of the West. So it does seem, according to history, that Paul did go there. We don't know much more about it, but we do know that some serious stuff went down during that period of time. We're going to talk about that for a little bit before we get into 2 Timothy. It was the night of July 19th. It's actually early morning, night of the 18th, early morning of the 19th. 64 AD when the city of Rome caught fire. And it was crazy. It burned for 6 days. Took them 6 days to get it under control. There are 14 districts in ancient Rome. 10 of them had some kind of damage. 3 of them were completely consumed by that fire. Now, why this is such a big deal, who did many people place the blame on for that?
Christians.
Well, that's what ended up happening. Who originally did people place the blame on? You remember?
Nero,
the emperor himself. He's the one that really shifted the blame to the Christians to take the blame off of himself. There are a lot of different accounts, and historians, you know, they say different things. I'm just going to give you some of the different ones. Some say that Nero sent out men secretly to start the fire. Some say that Nero sent out men not so secretly to start the fire, that he was upset. He wanted to build a new palace, and basically the Senate rejected that and said, "We don't have room for that stuff." So he said, "Okay, that's fine. I'll just burn most of Rome down. And now we have plenty of room." So that's some of the accusations. You know, there's that old rumor that he sat and played the lyre while Rome was burning, that he was actually about 37 miles away, but he could see Rome burning in the distance, and he was playing music as he watched it burn. You know, that's one historical account. Some say because, and this does seem to be true, because he took so much of the blame, he sought a scapegoat. So he wanted to place the blame on somebody else. Well, who did people not like in Rome? Among the Romans?
Christians.
They did not like them. Now, why, you know, Christians, the code of life that the Bible gives, these are gentle people, right? They are hardworking people. They respect the law. Why would Rome hate Christians so much?
It was against their teaching.
Okay. They were considered to be atheists by the Romans, which is the biggest irony to us when we think about it. In the world, could you call a Christian an atheist? But they were concerning the Romans, right? Because who did the Romans believe in?
God.
Zeus and Athena and all of these. And when Christians were expected to offer sacrifices to Zeus and to Poseidon and all these, what did the Christians do? No. They worship Jehovah, and they refuse to worship these other gods. So if you're a Roman and you see these Christians refusing to worship Zeus and all these others you've always believed in, what do you think they are? A bunch of atheists. Yeah. They considered them, you know, all kinds of rumors came up about Christians and all of these dark rituals and things they did because they were very different from the people. If you know anything about Rome at the time, morally, it had been that for quite a while. It was awful. And so would Christians be different from the morality that really filled most of the streets of Rome, they would be. And so there was a lot of suspicion there. They didn't like them. So it was really an easy target for that. I've got a couple things here. Tacitus was a historian. He was about 6 years old when the fire actually took place. Later, he would become one of the great historians of Rome. This is what he said about Nero. He said, Nero fabricated scapegoats. He punished with every refinement the notoriously depraved Christians. How did Tacitus feel about Christians? Same way that pretty much everybody in Rome did. He despised them because they didn't worship the Roman gods and things like that. He also says that Christians during this time were killed in very belittling ways. They would take them and they would put wild animal skins on Christians and they would let them be torn apart by dogs. They would crucify them, which is kind of not surprising. We know Rome certainly specialized in that. Another thing they did in Nero's gardens, he would take Christians and put them up on poles, and they would wrap them up and soak them, and they would set them on fire so they burned at night to give him light in his gardens. Now, what I didn't know, I'd heard that before. They also did this not only in his gardens, but at the Circus Maximus. Do you remember anything about the Circus Maximus? That's where they raced chariots. So it was this elongated oval as their racetrack. So he, just imagine this, they're having races going on and they have Christians up on poles where they can do it at night because they're lighting them and burning them. And they said that Nero, just to give you an idea of what his mental state was like, he would dress up as a charioteer and he would walk among the crowds while this kind of stuff's going on. Christians are being torn apart by dogs, they're being lit on fire. So these are the ones that he put his blame on. Now I say all of that, what would this mean for people like the apostles, who very much stood out as Christians?
But they were in great danger.
Absolutely.
But they did not care.
Well, they kept doing what they had always done. And that really is the reason why they were in great danger. We're going to see as we look in 2 Timothy, some among the brethren, and I take it some who had been teachers, really stopped teaching. They kind of backed away and said, ooh, this is more, but can we see why it became so dangerous for them? Another historian, Eusebius, says that both Peter and Paul were slain in Rome by Nero. So during these years, probably between 64 and 66, both Peter the Apostle and Paul the Apostle are killed by Nero. The dates vary a little bit. It seems that Peter was killed first, and then Paul, when he returned to Rome, was shortly killed afterwards. Peter's death would be a fulfillment of what? You remember? Jesus had told him that this was coming, right? If you'll turn back real quickly, turn to John 21. Remember in this chapter, this is basically where Jesus is. He's recommissioning Peter for the work of an apostle. Peter has denied him during his trial, and now Jesus is getting him back where he needs to be. And of course, he asked him that question, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me? And he asked him this three times. But going down the prophecy that Matt mentioned, verse 18, most assuredly I say to you, when you were younger, you girded yourself and walked where you wished. But when you were old, you will stretch out your hands, and another will gird you and carry you where you do not wish. This he spoke, signifying by what death he would glorify God. When he had spoken this, he said to him, follow me. Well, it's come to pass. Peter does lose his life in service to the Lord as an apostle. History tells us he was crucified upside down. The Romans were going to crucify him, and he said, I am unworthy to die the way that my Lord died. So the Romans, with their wonderful sense of humor, said, okay, we'll flip you upside down and crucify you that way. So Peter still endured that, kept teaching. And I bring all of this up to say, can you imagine what it would be like to be a Christian with this stuff going on? It would be terrifying, right? Imagine the blow of losing someone like Peter. And he didn't die of old age. He was murdered like this. Who killed him? Because this is heavy too. The government killed him for this. It's not like he was... And let's think about it. What kind of persecutions have Christians faced up to this point that we've seen in the book of Acts?
Stoning the Jews.
Okay, yeah, the Jews have been the primary opponents. They and certainly there have been stonings and various other life-threatenings and making it life miserable, but also willing to take their life. So the Jews have been a problem. Judaizing teachers, those Jews who have converted but still wanted Gentiles to keep the law of Moses, they've been a danger. Gentiles have been a danger, right? Think of Ephesus. Remember in Acts chapter 19, they're standing around yelling, "Great is Diana, goddess of the Ephesians," over and over again, and they were extremely dangerous. But now the persecution's gone to a different level. Those were pretty much contained in specific areas. Now you've got the emperor of Rome actually pushing this persecution. So it certainly becomes much, much more intense than anything that they faced before. Familiar with history. I'm sorry, somebody had a comment? Oh, I thought I saw a hand. Okay. If you're familiar with history, really, during their conquest, the Romans really had no regard for human life. They, you know, they tortured victims for pleasure. You've seen portrayals of the Colosseum. Basically, people would come in there to die and be torn apart by animals, be killed brutally right in front of crowds that are cheering. If that gives you some insight to the mentality of the society as a whole, if that's their chief form of entertainment. So, we know that Paul made it back to Rome. We know eventually he was killed. We don't know all the details. Did he come back voluntarily? Was he captured somewhere else and brought? I don't know. But before his death, he wrote 2 Timothy, this very moving letter to Timothy, who he considered to be his child in the faith. So that's what we're going to study this evening, 2 Timothy. We'll start there in chapter 1. Now, before we begin that, any comments you want to make? Bob?
How far was Hebrew written from 2 Timothy? Seemed like they were really pretty close because of what Hebrews chapter 11 said.
Yeah.
Because verse 34 talks about the violence of fire is keeping it into the soul.
Yeah, it would sound like the persecutions that were going on. Yeah, list.
I've got a note in mind that says 2 Timothy was written between 64 and 68 A.D., and Hebrews was written in 68 A.D.
Okay, so they are close together then. Yeah. So Hebrews, the letter to the Hebrews would be written really just a couple years before the temple is destroyed there at Rome. And this letter, and Paul's final letter written a few years before that. That makes sense. Yeah. All right, first four verses in 2 Timothy. Again, this is typical of Paul, his greeting. Paul, an apostle of Jesus Christ, by the will of God, according to the promise of life, which is in Christ Jesus, to Timothy, a beloved son. We've talked about this before. How did he feel about Timothy?
He loved him.
Just somewhat. We actually, I think it was this morning, we may have talked about, he first meets Timothy, or at least that we're told, at the beginning of his second missionary journey, as he's going through Lystra. He basically picks Timothy up and takes him with him on the second missionary journey. And as far as we can tell, their relationship is solid from then on out to the end of Paul's life. Timothy always seen as this rock and young at the time, and even young when he's being written to here, but still solid. And Paul has a lot of confidence in him and Titus as well. Notice, let's see. Verse 3, I thank God, whom I serve with a pure conscience, as my forefathers did, as without ceasing I remember you in my prayers night and day, greatly desiring to see you, being mindful of your tears, that I may be filled with joy. Mindful of your tears. So basically the beginning of it says, son, I love you, I thank God for you, and I want to see you badly. I am mindful of your tears. Why would Timothy be shedding tears?
Because he wasn't well.
He knows what's going to happen, right? In the previous times when Paul has been imprisoned, it always seemed that Paul was going to get out eventually, that things would work out. This time, it's very clear, Paul's not going to get out. It seems by the time he writes this, the sentence has already come down that he will be executed. Paul simply doesn't know when it'll be. It's coming. He's going to be killed for his faith. He doesn't know exactly when it is, but he knows it's coming because there's a sense of urgency to this letter, right? Come and see me. Come and see me as quickly as you can. He knows he's going to die. He's going to be killed, but he doesn't know when. Timothy's tears. And this is not to take anything away from Paul or his faithfulness. We talked this morning in Philippians 1. Was Paul ready to die? Yeah, he's absolutely ready for that. But from Timothy's perspective, is it still hard?
Yeah.
This is his father in the faith. And just let's put it in terms we understand. There are men here that I look to like that, who have been a huge influence on me. If they were about to be put to death for teaching the gospel, would I be upset and tearful over that? I would, and I shamelessly admit that to you. It would tear us apart to that. So let's just see what Timothy's going through here. And Paul basically is saying, son, I know you're upset, and I want to see you badly. Verses 5 through 7, you get this great commentary on Timothy's faith. Where did it start?
With his grandmother.
Yeah, Lois and Eunice, his grandmother and his mother. How does Paul describe their faith?
Sincere,
genuine are the words that are used there. You know, you can put on a good show. You can go to services all the time and you can know all the answers to all the questions that are asked. And you can know every note to every song that's sung. And you may not be genuine, right? You may just be putting on a good show. Not these ladies. They were solid, and Paul knew it. And he knew that the genuineness that they had lived also had been passed down to their grandson and son, Timothy. He was genuine. He was for real. We don't know much about his father other than the fact that he was a Gentile. Apparently, his father didn't do anything to stop his grandmother and mother from teaching him. So we can at least credit him with that, it seems, that he wasn't a big opponent of it, because Timothy certainly was exposed to these good things. Verse 6. What does Paul want to do for Timothy?
Put him in remembrance of what he had done for us.
Therefore, I remind you to stir up the gift of God which is in you through the laying on of my hands. For God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. I think there's two possibilities here of the gift that he's talking about. He could be referring to a miraculous gift that he had imparted upon Timothy at some point. Paul's certainly capable of doing that. It could be referring to the gift of Timothy's ministry, the opportunity that he had as a minister of the gospel, stirring him up. As a preacher, as an evangelist, how would Paul stir him up?
What's he,
okay, yeah, what is he stirring him up for? I guess is what I'm asking.
Getting prepared for what he's fixing to face.
Okay, yeah, that's it, Jamie. You need to be diligent to do what you're supposed to do. You need to be zealous about it, because now, especially, all the stuff we just looked at with the fire of Rome and the persecution, it just got harder to do that, right? It just got a lot more difficult to remain faithful. We're going to see examples here in the next few verses of people before the end of this chapter of people who didn't. They didn't stick with it because that persecution is rising all of the time. So he's reminding him, I want to stir up in you this gift. And if it is his ministry, certainly that. You be diligent. You teach the gospel no matter what. Whatever comes against you, whatever you have to face to do it anyway, because it's absolutely worth it. If a man basically on death row tells you that with all confidence, I'm about to die, it's absolutely worth it. 1,000 times it's worth it. I would do it again. Does that encourage you? It absolutely would. We know it would. And that's what Paul is doing for Timothy here. Verse 7 there. God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. As we said, times are getting more difficult for Christians. And as Jamie pointed out, Timothy needed to be prepared. Be reminded, whatever's going on out here, whoever Nero is and whatever he's doing, God is greater. He is bigger than Nero. And even if he does kill you, he's still greater. And he's still in charge of these things. You do what you know is right. So certainly the encouragement that he would have needed. We'll stop there for a second. Any comments on that? Mike?
Lance, just the thought that they were reminded here that they're not supposed to be fearful. And they're supposed to be bold in preaching the word.
Yeah.
And what was the consequence for them? It could be death.
Yeah.
When I come across somebody during the week, I need to be bold and courageous. And what's the consequence for me? Well, it might hurt my feelings if they tell me no. But I don't have the danger that they're facing. And yet, sometimes we're still scared to do that.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm so ashamed. There are times that I keep from saying what I should because I'm afraid somebody's going to get mad and they might be ugly and they might say something nasty. They're not going to burn my house down, right? And they're not going to pick up stones and bash my head in. That's a reality. for Timothy and those who are doing what he's doing at this point. One of the elders at Oak Grove used to say, you know, maybe what the church needs is a good persecution. Maybe we've just had it so easy for so long that we just kind of are lax and don't do what we need to do. Maybe we need to get fired up with some real threats and we'll realize this other stuff isn't the persecution that we think it is. You know, just one man's commentary, but certainly has some lessons in that. Good. Any other? Pick up in verse 8. Let's go through 14. Therefore, do not be ashamed of the testimony of our Lord, nor of me, his prisoner, but share with me in the sufferings for the gospel according to the power of God. But think about that plea. Don't be ashamed. Don't be ashamed of the Lord. Don't be ashamed of me as his prisoner. But rather, what is Paul asking him to do? You get ready to suffer too. Be prepared to suffer just as I've suffered for this. Pick it up in verse 9. Who has saved us and called us with a holy calling, not according to our works, but according to his own purpose and grace, which was given to us in Christ Jesus before time began. We talked about this in the letter to Titus. Where did the plan of the gospel come from? Or how long has it been around? Longer than time itself has been around. It's just impressive to me to think about that. God always knew. He always had it in his mind. It wasn't something he just came up with off the cuff and said, well, I don't know what we're going to do about this sin. Let's try this. It's not that. He knew always. He had the perfect plan in mind. And Paul reminding Timothy of it here. But it's now been revealed. So it was hidden for a long time. God's plan, his answer for sin. But now it's been revealed through the appearing of our Savior Jesus Christ. Let's see, verse 11, he reminds that I've been appointed as a preacher, an apostle, a teacher of the Gentiles. 12, for this reason I suffer these things. Why was Paul about to be put to death?
For being a Christian and preaching the gospel.
Yeah, for boldly preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ. That's why he's going to lose his life. There's no other reason. Paul didn't, you know, he's not committing crimes against the kingdom, these vile things on the side, and that's what got him in trouble. He is preaching Christ and him crucified, and that's what he's going to die for. And again, he's reminding Timothy, look at the end of it. For I know whom I have believed, and I am persuaded that he is able to keep what I have committed to him until that day. That is, it's very poetic language, but it means something. What is he saying?
He said it's the same thing he's saying. He believes that the Lord is going to keep his promise, and he's committed his life service and his soul unto him, and he will keep it until that day of judgment. And as the Lord has promised, he'll be given to the Lord.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, too, Lance, you got to think that being a Christian, you know that being ignited by a torch, being crucified or ripped up by dogs, all of that stuff, you know, lasts until you perish right then. But God's wrath will never end, and Christians know that. So I would much rather be ripped apart by a dog than suffer what God's going to do to me. So, you know, for him to, you know, that in mind, just that alone will make you just keep going and going and going, because, you know, why not? You know, I mean, why not stand up for what you believe in? Because if not, you're going to fall.
Yeah, this is Paul is saying, I have full confidence that all the promises God has made, he will keep them. He has promised us rest. He has promised us an eternity with him. And I believe fully in his power to do it. You know, he didn't just say it. I believe he has the power to do it. And I entrust myself to him. Timothy, you do the same thing. He is worthy to trust like that. Betty, I thought I saw your hand.
Yes. From the beginning, he was preparing them to have faith to believe everything that I've told you, because, you know, it's wind, time is winding out for you. And I need you to get to where you need to be. And he was prepared.
Yeah, think about this. You know, it's, I mean, let's be honest. No matter how strong your faith is, and it's, I mean, let's be fair. It's easy to talk about it in here tonight, right? There's nobody standing outside with torches, and there are no wild dogs ready to tear me apart when I walk out the door. It is much easier to talk about it here. But, and let's just try to put ourselves in their places. When that persecution is staring you in the face, when you go before Nero And you know that crazy man means business. It's not like his conscience is going to keep him from ripping you to shreds and say, oh, this would be a bad thing to do. I don't want to hurt a whole bunch of people. Oh, please. He would do it in the blink of an eye. Standing in front of that as your judge, this is a reality. Right? This is what Christians were actually facing. So, would you be tempted in that situation to dial back your teaching? Would it be tempting? Especially, you know, for an evangelist, someone who is publicly proclaiming it, but for all Christians, and certainly the apostles, would it be tempting to say, well, you know, we'll still teach, we're going to tone this down a little bit. We're not going to proclaim it as boldly. It would be a temptation. And what is Paul saying?
Go for it.
Don't do it. Don't back down. You preach it. Preach it more diligently than you ever have. It is worth it. The God who has given us all these things, who came up with this plan, He is with us. He's still with us. And don't let these threats keep you from doing what you need to do. Bobby, go ahead.
In a time like that is when we have to remember the first and great commandment that Christ talked about, loving Him with all our heart, all our mind, all our soul. Just forget about the danger we're facing, because even if we're killed, it just helps us get to where we're going quicker.
Terry, yes.
As I think about Paul and Timothy, Paul was preparing Timothy not only to be an evangelist, but to be a soldier, a fearless soldier, even preparing him for death if necessary. So when you think about it, a soldier of God would need to be fearless. Because you think about, I mean, you'd be fearless to the people out there in the world because you have something much more greater fear than the people in the world. So Paul was preparing him to be a fearless soldier.
Yeah.
Even unto death.
Yeah, Jesus even gives that description. Talking about, you know, don't, rather than fearing those who can do harm to you, fear the one who can cast your soul into hell after death. Not only the one who can take your life, but the one who can eternal death and destruction, kill soul and body. Yeah. And actually, in this book, the very next chapter, he's going to talk about being a soldier. And those things absolutely apply with that. Victor.
He said, when Paul boldly goes to preach the gospel, he's not afraid because he's not living in sin. He's getting faithful. But if he was living in sin and then trying to go out, you know, that would be a different story. You know, have something here.
Absolutely. I think that's one of the things that's understood in this. And that's part of the preparation as well. Don't just prepare by studying to know what you should preach. Be who you're supposed to be. You know, have that righteous relationship with the Lord. Because if he doesn't, well, then death is very fearful, right? We talked about that this morning concerning King Saul. When Samuel tells him what's going to happen the next day to him and his sons, how does Saul react? He is terrified. Should he have been? Yeah, he was completely separated from the Lord in every way imaginable. So, yeah, that's a great point, Victor. Paul had confidence in the end result because he had confidence in where his relationship was with his Lord. You and I can have it too. We absolutely can. J.W., go ahead.
I think that's what Jesus was saying when he was on earth teaching his disciples. He said the flesh profits nothing. The spirit have life. The words that I speak are spirit and life. So yeah. I imagine Timothy, Paul and Paul, righteous men that died, this is where they put their faith and trust in the spirit. And that's what we need.
Unfortunately, we're going to see some examples here in just a minute of those who didn't do the same thing. And he's going to bring those up as well. I was going to talk about Phygellus and Hermogenes. We'll talk about those in just a second. Pick up in 13. Hold fast the pattern of sound words which you have heard from me in faith and love which are in Christ Jesus. In other words, Timothy, I just told you what I've done. You do the same thing. Faith and love. Hold fast to these things. We talked about that, I think, Wednesday night. Hold fast. You grab it. Grab hold of it. And no matter what comes. I always think of the picture of like a life preserver. You go overboard and all you got is a life preserver. What do you do?
Hold on.
You know, my handprints will permanently be imprinted on that thing. Because that's your only hope. That's the only source of life and getting out of that you have. And he's saying, do that. Do that with the truth God's given you. Hold on to it. Don't let anything tear that away from you or cause you to let go of that. Good. 15. This you know, that all those in Asia have turned away from me, among whom are Phrygellus and Hermogenes. The Lord grant mercy to the household of Onesiphorus, for he often refreshed me and not was ashamed of my chain. But when he arrived in Rome, he sought me out very zealously and found me. The Lord grant to him that he may find mercy from the Lord in that day. And you know very well how many ways he ministered to me in Ephesus. So in those four verses, he gives two examples, right? Three individuals, but two sides of the example there. What happened with Phrygellus and Hermogenes?
Turned away from
me. You know they have turned away from me. And he mentions two names. I don't have a clue who these guys are, but Timothy did. He would have known them. Certainly that's why Paul mentions this. By mentioning them by name, very likely it seems to me these would have been well-known teachers of the gospel. People that Timothy certainly was familiar with. Maybe people you wouldn't have expected to have left. I think of Demas too. You know, that's going to come up later in the letter. Demas had been one who had been with Paul so many times, and then there at the end, he's forsaken me, having loved this present world more. And so he's going to leave as well. So you really have this book bookended by apostasy. But in the midst of that, even though Phrygellus and Hermogenes are leaving, what did Onesiphorus do? Rome is extremely dangerous, as we pointed out at this time. And yet, Onesiphorus, when he comes to Rome, what does he do? You know, that's impressive, isn't it? I'm going to find Paul, who certainly would have been kept in prison somewhere at this time. I'm going to find him, and I'm going to do whatever I can to bring him whatever relief that I can. If you show up at the prison, and you're looking for Paul the Apostle so you can do good for him, what does that suggest to the prison keepers? Most likely you're a Christian like this guy, right? I mean, most people don't want to help Paul out. So to do that would really be to put his neck on the line, to really even take a chance to offer him some refreshment, some relief here. And yet he does. He's willing to do that. Steve?
Can you use verse 15 to show that it's possible to turn from God?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, that is one of those. To me, it's as clear as it possibly could be. He actually uses the phrase there, have turned away from me. And as somebody who says it's impossible to fall away might say, well, they turned away from Paul. It doesn't mean they turned away from the Lord. Guys, can you do one without the other? I mean, that's ridiculous. Paul's teaching was in line. Where did his teaching come from?
From
the Holy Spirit. So if you turn against Paul's teaching, then you've turned against the teaching of the Spirit, and therefore you've apostatized from God Himself. Steve, that is right in front of me, and I didn't even bring that point out. I'm glad you did. Yes, yeah, this is proof that even during the time of miracles, people were falling away from the Lord. Did they have proof before them that God's power was right there and doing all these great things, and still they were pulled away? And in this case, I take it that fear did this one. With Demas, I don't know. It says this present world, that could have been a lot of things. I mean, that could have been any kind of immorality. This one I really think is fear that pulls these guys away. But absolutely, they had put themselves, their souls, in danger. Bobby?
Well, trying to get the disciples to turn away from Paul, you know, Satan had been victorious. But this one time, he got Peter to turn away from Christ and Christ was facing the cross. Peter denied him when he was asked, wasn't he one of Christ's disciples? So, see, figured he'd try it again.
Sure. He goes with what works.
Another disciple.
Yeah,
he did try with us.
This situation is very similar to what Peter faced when he's walking right there in the midst of that trial. It would have been dangerous to associate yourself with Jesus, and that fear played a huge part in this. That's a really good point, Bobby. On the other hand, Onesiphorus, we talked about how he seeks him out. The others, it seems, were ashamed, or at the very least afraid. Onesiphorus, you see the other side. He's not ashamed. He's willing to confess openly where his allegiance lies. You know, we might be tempted to skim over verses like this. If some of you guys have started reading over with your year-long Bible reading. When you get to certain chapters in Genesis, you're going to have a bunch of names. And it's very tempting to say, I don't know these people, you know, and just move on. But they've been preserved for a reason. And these names, I don't know these people, but can I learn a lesson from them? These are very important lessons from three names here that show us what to not do and what we should do. So really, really good emphasis there. Let's see. Okay, any other comments? I covered everything I want to mention.
Well, I just want to say one thing. When Terry was talking about they made Timothy, he was preparing Timothy to be a soldier. He, you know, not also was he preparing him to do that. He was also teaching him that if the people that are watching him, you know, he has to be strong in order for them to be strong in that time too. Because if not, then they'll fall away because they're like, well, he's talking about it, but he ain't doing it, you know. And next thing you know, you got a whole bunch of people running from God because they're scared. So he has to be strong in order to make them strong. That way, if they do face persecution, they're not, I mean, of course, they're going to, you know, be freaked out a little bit, but they're still going to go on and stand their ground. Because if he's doing it as one person through God, then they should do it too.
Think about both sides of that. It would be true for every Christian. Did a lot of Christians at the time know who Timothy was? He would have influenced a lot of people already, and he would continue to. If you hear that Timothy, faithful Timothy, companion of Paul, has backed down and fallen away, what impact would that have on the church worldwide?
A lot.
Well, that would hurt, wouldn't it?
Yeah, because they would be like, well, he don't believe
in Timothy can't do it.
Yeah.
Well, but what about the other? What about the other side of it? If you hear that Timothy is teaching just like he always taught, and he's doing what he's always done, what effect does that have?
Yeah,
I can do it too. Paul was faithful until death. Timothy was faithful. You know what? I can do it too. I can be faithful until death just as surely as these guys. So either way you go, you're going to be an example, right? You're going to be a good one or a bad one. And certainly he's begging and pleading with him and encouraging him to be that good example. Good. I thought I saw another hand. Yeah, Norris.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, you know, at least me, before I became a Christian, you know, I never thought that people would be persecuted for standing up for, you know, for something. And now it's so obvious that standing up for the truth that you see from, you know, and from the Bible time, that there's going to be persecution and things like that. And so it's something that you just know that's going to happen somewhere or other.
Yes.
And I think people in the world, I think that's why some people, it's hard for them to obey the gospel because they just feel like they can't hold up to God's standard and stuff like that. And this will feel the pain for a lot of people that they know that some way or another they don't, you know, they might not be able to withstand, you know, persecution and stuff.
Yeah. Is it true that you're going to face challenges when you become a Christian? Absolutely. It is. Can you overcome it?
Yes.
You can. And I'm afraid that for those who are tempted to obey and don't, I'm afraid they convince themselves. And maybe they let Satan convince them that I can't do it. Well, by yourself, no, you can't do it. But you're not by yourself. When you render that obedience, you've got the Lord helping you. But you also have a whole bunch of brethren who love your soul and want to make sure you go to heaven. They're going to help you too. And they're not going to... I think you get this idea, well, what if I mess up, man? All my brethren are going to look at me like I'm some kind of freak. And they'll be like, oh, what a loser. Why did we even bother with him? That is not it. It will not be that way. It'll be just the opposite. Their biggest concern will be strengthening you and helping you to get there. And I need... Once I got that in my mind, life did get easier. When I realized that these guys are pulling for me. They're not. They don't have a clipboard and they're like, you wait till he messes up. I got my red pen, I'm going to light him up. It's not that. They want to help you, and they will, and they have over the years. And Paul's doing that for Timothy here. And I don't have any other letters or indications, but what do you think Timothy did for other people after this?
Same thing.
I believe that with all my heart, that he would have done the same thing. Good. Bye.
For an excuse, have you heard, well, I'm just human?
Oh, yeah.
So was Christ. So was Peter. So was Paul. They was tempted by Satan. but they didn't give in. Well, Peter did for a while.
But he fixed it. He repented after that. Absolutely. So that's one of the reasons I love the example of Peter as much as it is. Because when we see Christ's purity, we say, well, you know, he's deity. I mean, that's not me. I can't make that argument with Peter. Right. Peter's just as flawed as any of us. He messed up big time. But he fixed it. And he came back. And that's I love it. I love that example. Even Paul, did he make some mistakes? How many Christians died because of Paul's decisions? I don't know the answer to that question, but he was responsible for killing people who he would become brethren to later. So, you know, they were able to overcome this. I can overcome whatever I get sidetracked by. I saw J.W. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I think about brothers influencing one another. And the scriptures talks about iron sharpening iron.
Yeah.
Brother sharpening another.
Yeah.
What that true Christians would do that.
Yeah.
They would do that.
Yeah, they don't have a desire to see you fail. Their desire is for you to get sharper and to get stronger. That's what they want to see. They want to see you wear your armor better and help you with that. Mary, go ahead.
Okay. And it also tells us too in Philippians 4:13 that I can do all things
in Christ. Yeah. That's not just a fancy phrase. To end that letter to the Philippians. He absolutely believed that. Christ can help us through. We can't do it by ourselves. We couldn't bear that weight. But with Him, going to Him in prayer, and with the strength that He gives us through prayer, and through His Word, and through our brethren, we absolutely can. And He expected. Paul believed that. Good. Maybe just one question here. And I guess this is the question that Onesiphorus would have to ask himself. Do I love the Lord more than I fear the anger and the ridicule of the Romans? I mean, isn't that really what he's going to come down to? I'm going to have to ask a similar question. Do I love the Lord more than I fear the anger and the ridicule of the people around me? Because if the answer is yes, what will I do? I'll teach the gospel. I will. And I will make the most of those opportunities to tell others about the Lord and to do those things that are right. We can do those things. Good. Pick up in chapter 2. We'll look at a few verses here. Therefore, whenever you see therefore, of course, it's based on what has just happened. He's just told them, Onesiphorus was strong. Therefore, you, my son, also do what? Be strong in the grace that is in Christ Jesus. And this is actually going to... We're going to connect to the point that Terry brought up in verse 3 as a good soldier, but I don't want to miss verse 2. I think it's extremely important. This is one of those, we all have different ways of memorizing things. Memorize this verse and remember where it is. And I like it because it's 2:2:2. Numbers like that help me. It's 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 2. Three twos. I can remember that. Look at how it's done. The gospel was never designed, I don't want to say that, it's not a complex method of teaching that only geniuses can wrap their head around. That's never what was intended, right? Who is the gospel for? Everyone. Who can be effective teachers of the gospel? Everybody. What determines whether or not these people were good teachers? It wasn't the degrees they had. It wasn't their IQ level. None of that. Look in there in verse 2. What is the determining factor about whether or not they would teach this?
Faithful
men, right? Let's just go through it. And these things which you have heard from me. Okay, so there's from one faithful to another, right? Nobody would question Paul's faith. He taught it to Timothy. Did Paul pick a faithful one there to pass it on to? Absolutely. You take it. The things you heard from me among many witnesses, commit these to faithful men who will be able to teach others also. There's the pattern. It's not complex. Faithful. Believing truly what you're teaching, find somebody who truly believes it. What will they do when they learn it?
Spread it.
They will turn around and they will teach it to somebody. And they will turn around and they will teach it to somebody. That's the pattern. And this whole stuff about, well, you know, I don't know, it's so complex. And you see in some religions this hierarchy of, I don't even know how to describe it. I mean, it's almost like, well, we can't teach you this until you get to this level. Oh, please. This is not, to use the old phrase, it's not rocket science, right? It is. The gospel is very simple in a lot of ways. There are some complex things that we'll study our whole lives, but the basic idea of the gospel, it's not hard. It is meant for mankind, and it can be taught. And if you've got an open heart, you can learn it. You absolutely can. And not only can you learn it, you'll be effective in teaching it to others. And so the temptation is, well, you know, I don't speak well, and I stumble, you know, and I forget what I'm trying to say, and my tongue gets tied. It's okay. Are you faithful? Then you can have a positive influence with the gospel on other people. You absolutely can. Might you need to take somebody with you? Maybe. Maybe. Might you need to write it down if you get so nervous? Maybe. Can you teach somebody the gospel through a series of emails or a series of letters? Can you have a powerful impact on them like that? Yeah. If you have a heart to do it, you can do it. Don't let any of those limitations keep you from doing it. If you're faithful, that's what God's looking for. He will serve. And we will find talents we didn't know we had when we give ourselves over and say, Lord, I want to be useful to you. Please use me. He'll do that. He'll give us ways to do it. Good. Let's talk about the soldiers part there in verse 3. You therefore must endure hardship as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. I love the fact that Terry's already brought this up. Soldiers and a lot of the guys in here have served in the military. What sort of hardships do soldiers endure?
They'll lay down their life for what they believe in.
Yeah, people trying to kill you would be top on my list of things that soldiers would have to endure. Weariness, the times of that. Separation from loved ones, is that a hardship to endure? Fear. I mean, are there times that you would be afraid? My grandfather fought in World War II. He said, I was only afraid once while I was over there. I said, really? He said, yeah, I started being scared when I got off the plane, and I was scared until I got back on the plane to come back over. That's fair. That makes sense. Yeah. So, you know, is that part of a soldier having to deal with the fear? And it is. And being a soldier of Christ, is fear going to come on you? Are you going to be faced with fearsome times? Can you overcome it? We've seen throughout this whole lesson that we absolutely can. Will there be attacks? Will there be weariness? Maybe we forget about that sometimes. Will you get tired as a Christian sometimes? You will. That's when you need brethren. It's maybe one of the best times to have somebody to help you bear some of those burdens. So a good soldier, endure like a good soldier of Jesus Christ. Good. Verse 4 to go with it, and then that's probably a good place because I kind of want to spend more time on verse 5. But verse 4, no one engaged in warfare entangles himself with the affairs of this life that he may please him who enlisted him as a soldier. The emphasis is wholehearted service, right? Don't get distracted. And maybe that's one of the hardest things as Christians. There are so many things out there. Do we have other things to deal with in this life? I mean, let's just be honest. We have families that we're taking care of. We have jobs. We have concerns. We have health issues. We have all of these things to deal with. There are distractions everywhere. What is the admonition here in verse 4? Focus. If you are in the middle of a battle, go back, we're still talking about soldiers here. What if he's thinking about what he's going to eat when he gets back to the camp that night? It's not going to end well, probably, right? And not a very diligent way of handling it. The same idea is here. You stay focused. Remember what your purpose is. Remember who you're serving. Be a good enlisted servant of the one whom you call master. A great, great illustration that he has here. We talked some recently about athletics, and we'll pick up with that in verse 5. That's probably a good one to stop on now. So I'll stop. Any comments you guys have? Victor, yeah.
Don't be afraid, don't be worried about anything. Just keep faithful.
Yeah, it's...
Don't worry about anything, but stay faithful.
Yeah, it... I'm extremely thankful for examples like Paul. Because it's one thing to say, oh, don't be scared. But it's a lot better when you see somebody who is in an even worse situation than we're going to find ourselves in, and they actually do it. You know, it's one thing to say it, but seeing somebody do it, I'm thankful for these. Good. Thoughts on hand over here. Anybody else? Okay. We're planning to pick up Wednesday night in chapter 2, verse 5. I expect us to finish 2 Timothy unless we get really excited and want to make a lot of comments about it, then that's fine too. After 2 Timothy, we'll plan, if you want to go ahead and read ahead, we'll plan to start in the book of James. So go ahead and get ready for that. We'll look at some of the chronology again there. So we'll stop there.